Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 52. Ben Flanagan of Aspect Radio. Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films.
Ben, how are you today?
Ben, I'm great. How's it going?
Pretty good, man. Well, it's October, and that means it's time for Halloween and scary movies. And so we thought it'd be a good idea to talk about just what exactly does that mean? What is scary in movies? Do only horror movies scare us? And just kind of talk about that in general. This is going to be a bit of a confessional, I bet, because, you know, we're going to have to not only face our fears, but confess them, share our fears with one another. Our relationship may be in a different place at the end of this conversation.
I'm comfortable with that for now.
Me too. We'll see what we can do about that. Did you have any specific place you wanted to start?
No, not really. I guess the place we could start is just about movies that scare us or have scared us in our lifetime, movies that have, you know, stuck with us for years, overnight, you know, movies that may have scared us at one point but don't now for whatever reason. Maybe we've grown out of a certain fear. Are there any movies in particular that still scare you to this day, or do you think that you are mature enough as a film goer now to where you can kind of sit through anything or revisit anything without any long-term effects?
So for me, there's a horror movie that it's not that it's scary, it's that it's actually physically nauseating to me, which I'll go ahead and group in that because it is a horror movie and I watched it at Halloween. I believe it was Halloween time, like 1993. David Cronenberg's The Fly came on television and for some reason came on like broadcast television. And I watched it and it seemed to be unedited. And that movie is gross. That scarred me. And to this day, there are things that I remember seeing in that movie that if I think about them, I get queasy. And it didn't help that my brother and my dad actually exacerbated this by, like, bringing it up as often as they could for, like, a week afterward. There are images in The Fly of the stuff squirting out from underneath his fingernail and, like, the wings starting to grow out of his back and the hamburger meat baboon. There are things in that movie that images and just some gross stuff that it's still it's a fear that I've discussed with my wife. It's a fear that I have of watching the movie again. And I know, you know, it should be this year that I face that fear and just go ahead and watch it again and just get over it. But it probably won't happen because I am a tremendous coward.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring up The Fly because it's not one of my movies right now, but I can recall the first time I watched it, and it was probably when it aired on something like TNT or USA or TBS whenever when I was growing up, probably around the same time you watched it. And I'm guessing that it was an era when networks were a little bit more lax in terms of what they were prepared to show cable audience. And for me, there were some really terrifying moments, like when he spit his acid mucus or whatever on people, and that kind of gore was just not something I was used to, and it freaked me out the first time I watched it, and it took me a long time to come up with the courage to watch it again, and that wasn't until a few years ago, and for whatever reason it just didn't really affect me the same way this time, probably because I'm a quote unquote grown up, but I don't know. I think that gore now is something that doesn't bother me nearly as much in my older age. I'm not queasy necessarily when I watch movies, especially movies that lean on sort of fantastic premises, premises and moments and effects. But more often than not, I laugh at those things and I find good humor in them and I just kind of go along for the ride. But there have been cases in the past when gore has really freaked me out, and that's definitely one of them. Another one that I can think of, and this might be kind of out of left field, I don't know how familiar you are with trauma movies.
Yeah.
But enough. I remember, for whatever reason, I had access to the movie Tromeo and Juliet, which came out in like the mid to late 90s, and it was on VHS. And when I watched it, I don't remember anything really about the movie other than it just, its gore and makeup effects just totally freaked me out. And I had to look away from the screen, and I had nightmares about it, and there's no way that I could have ever revisited it, and I haven't since. So it remains to be seen how I'll do a Tromeo and Juliet the next time I watch that, if that ever happens. Can't make any promises, but for me, if it's gory or violent or creepy or sinister, the stuff that really freaks me out more often than not these days is it tends to be rooted in realism of some sort. Like, we live in a world where this stuff can and does happen, and that is the stuff that I find truly eerie. And it's not always hyper real for me. Like, for instance, a movie that I saw for the first time on VHS, not in the theater, that really stuck with me was David Fincher's Seven. And it remains one of my favorite films to this day. I really feel like it's one of the greatest movies ever made. It is so entertaining, but it is really dark and grisly at times. And I just think that it's obviously the strength of Andrew Kevin Walker's script and David Fincher's direction, and obviously the performances from all of the actors in it. But the characters and the situations and the just terrifying, just moments of terror and violence in it really stuck with me, obviously, when I saw it at probably too young an age. But I revisited it recently, and it's just one of the most effective thrillers in something I would truly consider a horror movie and probably the greatest serial killer movie ever made, but it's one that really remains effective. Did you have that experience with Seven?
I watched Seven as older. I think I was in college even before I watched it, and I watched it more analytically, and I agree that it's fantastic, and I think it's kind of strangely underrated, I think. The gore and everything, it didn't affect me at that kind of primal level that it probably did, you know, had I watched it when I was younger. But around that same time, I got into Twin Peaks. And this isn't a movie, but there is a scene of terror in, like, I think it's the season finale, maybe, of season one of Twin Peaks. I won't say what happens in it, except Bob. I'll just say that. Bob happens. And I watched that as a, you know, close to grown adult. On a portable DVD player in my bedroom, it was like right before I was going to sleep, and I watched this nightmare scene of this person being attacked, basically. Ugh. And I felt like I remember not really being able to breathe. I felt like I couldn't get up. Like I felt like I had no choice but to continue watching this thing that was happening. And it's the way that it's filmed, the way that David Lynch chooses to integrate like spotlighting and things like that into the scene. It is an assault on the senses. It is literally a nightmare. And I think I had to watch Finding Nemo or something, like 10 minutes of Finding Nemo after that, just to get to sleep, and to, keep from going insane.
Yeah.
But I think what scene I'm talking about.
I really struggled with Bob many years ago when honestly it was when Twin Peaks was in its first run, and our dad, my parents would let us watch Twin Peaks on, I don't know if it was Sunday night or whenever it aired. And, you know, I may have told this story in some capacity on Film Nerds before, but my dad, you know, he grew up a huge film fan and TV fan, so he was aware of who filmmakers were. And, you know, he had a very specific taste. And so he introduced a lot of what, you know, we grew up watching, and he exposed us to Twin Peaks and thought maybe they'll find this interesting, albeit at a very young age. But he wouldn't let us watch an episode if during the opening credits it was revealed that the episode was directed by David Lynch, because I guess he knew that it would just be too weird. And he was right, you know, he was probably right, but, you know, he didn't direct every episode, and somehow I think we snuck a few Lynch-directed episodes in there. And yeah, like Bob was somebody who terrified me and still does. If I go back and watch Twin Peaks scenes and clips and reels on YouTube now, I honestly kind of, in some cases, watch through the, you know, my fingers when Bob comes up, because
yeah,
it's just so terrifying and so effectively staged and cast, for God's
yeah
sake, man.
Yeah.
He's just the most, he's just the scariest looking person ever. And yeah, it's a TV show, but, you know, Fire Walk With Me, the Twin Peaks movie, has some super scary stuff in it. And I would encourage people, if they haven't seen it and they're Twin Peaks fans, definitely check it out. And, you know, I'm glad you brought up Twin Peaks, because it was something that I was going to bring up. And also, you know, although, you know, these movies aren't, and the show is not necessarily what you would call realistic, you know, it's, you know, in some cases supernatural. It borders on a few different genres, and it's just generally creepy and eerie. Mulholland Drive, another David Lynch movie, is something that really stuck with me and has some really terrifying moments. You know,
oh, yeah,
particularly the dream sequence where, you know, the guy is telling, you know, about,
yes,
he's telling the guy about his dream, where he goes out in the diner parking lot and looks behind the dumpster, and out comes you know who. And it's just too much to bear at the time, I feel like, the character in the movie. And there are just some things, and I don't want to get too specific, throughout the rest of that movie where Lynch just, he really kind of tops himself when it comes to creating that mood and really putting the audience in a place that it's never been before and never really wants to go again. Yet I find myself marking the calendar, hoping to buy Mulholland Drive on Criterion when it comes out later this month.
Yeah, you have a great time with that. that scene in particular is just so terrifying. The one thing that I was going to say that I think creeps me out a whole lot is unnecessary stillness, or maybe kind of like, you know, stillness that things that are still and shouldn't be. Or things that are observing and shouldn't be. There's this great touch in Philip Kaufman's Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where before it's really revealed that anything is going down, he does this thing where, like, just details in the frame reveal that something weird is happening. Like in one shot, there's it's just a shot of Donald Sutherland talking to somebody. It's Brooke Adams and, walking down the street, but the shot starts like pan to the left and you just see some guy running away from something and the camera follows him until the camera lands on them talking. And then that's it. Like nobody talks about it. There's another shot where somebody's walking down the hallway, and out of the, in the corner of the frame, you just see some guy staring through the window of a door, watching these people walk by. And you know there's something seriously wrong with that guy, and it's horrifying, and it's just a really wonderful touch. It's one of my favorite devices I've ever seen in a horror movie to set a tone. Also, another Donald Sutherland movie, strangely, Don't Look Now, I think is really good at setting a tone that it makes you feel nauseous. It makes you feel just unsettled. And then, in keeping on the stillness, Klaus Kinski's performance in Werner Herzog's Nosferatu, and really the other Count Orlok, Max Schreck, in the original Nosferatu, those are some really scary performances, because, again, it's just this guy that's watching the people around him and sitting totally still. And when he does move, it's unnerving. And in Werner Herzog's Nosferatu, there's this really creepy way that Herzog uses space. He keeps his characters really far apart, but then whenever Klaus Kinski's Orlok kind of gets closer to anybody, your skin crawls, and you just imagine being in the room with this guy and looking through the, you know, around the room and wondering, all right, what can I throw between us if this guy even nudges towards me, you know, by an inch. So that's just something that I think is just a really effective device for horror directors to use. It's just stillness, and in some cases, space.
Yes, stillness, space, tone, like you said, and silence and quiet in horror movies and in movies generally really freaks me out. In all of the movies up to now, really. I mean, if you think of those Lynch moments, yes, there are like the strobe light effects and the strange language, the backwards language that they speak in. But there are moments too when it's just incredibly calm and you just really have no idea where a scene is going to go and what characters are going to do. And that sort of like unpredictability is something that has a major effect on me. But sticking with that quiet and stillness, a director who obviously is, you know, has really earned a reputation for implementing that kind of stuff. And space, too, is Stanley Kubrick. And he directed what I consider the greatest horror movie ever in The Shining. I know that Stephen King purists out there might disagree, but, I mean, he really obviously made the story and just that moment in time his own. And some of the imagery in that movie just still sticks with me, and it's something that I think about year-round, let alone during the Halloween season. And I love revisiting it, even though it totally freaks me out. I learn new things, and I love re-exploring certain scenes, like when he is talking to Lloyd the bartender, or when he's in the bathroom with the former caretaker. And I mean, they're just really brilliantly designed and executed scenes, and the performances are just so muted and perfect and set such a brilliant tone that obviously Kubrick specifically wanted to maintain from beginning to end. And, you know, there are moments in that movie and times when it gets loud, when it utilizes some really terrifying music, and the soundtrack is something that he obviously experiments with. But definitely The Shining is a movie that still sticks with me. I mean, am I off base calling it the greatest horror movie of all time?
Absolutely not. I mean, I don't know what mine would be off the top of my head, but no, I think that there's plenty of evidence right there in that movie to suggest that, you know, it covers all the bases and it does everything that a scary movie should do. You mentioned the loudness. I think that's something that I don't know if it necessarily, I mean, I guess it usually shocks me, you know, in the moment, but when something super loud happens or when there's a really loud cut to something, it's not necessarily scary that sticks with me, but it's scary in the moment, and then it kind of makes me, like, pump my fist a little bit at how awesome it was. The first thing I think of is the cut to the title screen in Drag Me to Hell, which is one of those things where this, like, ridiculous scene of terror happens at the beginning of the movie, and then it seems like Sam Raimi totally messes up his sound mix and cuts to the title screen on this super loud musical score. And it is, in the moment, it because the tension is so high, it makes you jump because it's so shocking. But then you're just like, oh, yeah, heck yeah, like, you know what you're in for. And he does that, I think, a lot in Evil Dead 2. I feel like there was, maybe it's The Conjuring, or I think a James Wan movie, Conjuring or Insidious 2 or something like that, does a very similar thing. And it's like an immediate, like, letter grade for me, like upgrade for me. If a horror director really, you know, knows when to cut to something loud and take advantage of, you know, shock that way, it's super satisfying.
Yeah, Drag Me to Hell is a great example. And yeah, it kind of feels like, I agree, it's one of the loudest movies I've ever seen in a movie theater before. And it's like the sound guy, like in running the theater, like trips and leans on the volume control, you know, and it just like goes up and never comes down. And it's really fun. And that's the thing, it's like fear is fun in movies a lot of the times. And Sam Raimi is somebody who obviously believes that and you know, believed it anyway. And then he did once again and Drag Me to Hell. And you know, that's the thing. It's like I love it when horror movies have so much fun with scaring people, and that's what it's all about. I mean, it's one thing to create an eerie atmosphere and create a mood like that, but I think that more often than not, I have more fun at horror movies when the horror movies themselves are you can tell they're sort of having a blast doing it. And I think Raimi is a guy who's probably the best at that, where he's like, you know what, I'm just going to sit on this audience and just beat them over the head with scary crap, you know? Dragging Me to Hell is just such a fun experience because, you know, in the past, really up to this point, I've always kind of rolled my eyes at jump scares and trailers and horror movies generally because they're just so easy, you know? They're just such an easy device that tend to have no weight whatsoever behind them. They're just a cheap gag that, you know, gets people scared in a moment, and then it just kind of goes away. There's no lingering effect. But with Drag Me to Hell, and in the case of, like, Evil Dead 2, like you said, he really makes those jump scares count, like, big time, and you look forward to the next time they come, and you know they're coming, but they get you anyway, and that, to me, is just the mark of a true entertainer and storyteller and somebody who cares about his audience, even though he scares the crap out of them in the process.
Yeah, I mean, for me, if I don't ever really consider myself a horror fan, because when a horror movie works for me, it's usually because there's a master filmmaker at work, you know. And I think if I'm going to consider something a great horror movie, it's usually directed by a director that I appreciate otherwise, you know, like Kubrick, like Raimi, like Spielberg, someone like that. And whenever I do see a horror movie that has a director that I didn't, you know, expect to deliver something, I immediately know that, okay, I need to look at that person's filmography. And The Babadook comes to mind as a movie that, now that I know Jennifer Kent can totally make an extremely accomplished horror movie, I know that she can probably do a lot of other things really well too. And she probably won't rest on those laurels for her career.
Well, I just hope that doesn't mean that she's going to direct the Poltergeist 2 remake, you know? Like,
yeah, I'm sure she got that call.
Yeah, I mean, don't you fear that filmmakers like her who get the notice, you know, that they get in the U.S. for making a great horror movie like The Babadook, that don't you fear that they're going to fall into that vortex of Hollywood and they're just going to, I mean, you know, you give them a lot of credit, and I assume Jennifer Kent is going to make the movie that she obviously wants to make, but you want to see that talent remain unwasted, and you want her to tap into it once again like she did the first time. Is that ever something that you fear might happen with directors?
Absolutely. And, I mean, you look at, like, again, James Wan, who had a big success in Saw, which isn't a movie I love or am that crazy about, but, you know, he that happened to him. He got kind of pegged as the horror guy. And then, hey, come to find out, he can also direct a pretty great action movie as well with Furious 7. So, yeah, I think that's something I'm always worried about. And all you can hope is that, again, that The Babadook is so good that Jennifer Kent knows that and that she can say, no, I'm not just going to, you know, I'm not going to be a scrub. I'm going to be the great director that I clearly am capable of being.
Yeah, and you know, there are a handful of, you know, obviously great horror directors, but I think that they're also on the list are many of the all-time great filmmakers, guys that we named on our lists of top three filmmakers of all time, you know, through our eyes. I mean, there are obviously the Hitchcocks, and we mentioned Kubrick. Are there any other great directors who you wouldn't necessarily categorize as horror directors who have made great horror movies or have had truly great moments of horror in their filmography so far? Like, I don't know that Christopher Nolan would necessarily consider The Prestige a horror movie by definition, but I kind of do, and it's a movie that I find really truly unsettling and has such a great and unsettling tone from beginning to end, and ends on such kind of a creepy and in a way kind of a horror moment, you know, at the end of the movie. I mean, Nolan's a guy, I think, who would really flourish in the genre if he really wanted to, and I'm glad that he was able to apply touches and sort of explore the genre here and there, whether, you know, it's for an entire movie or just part of it. Are there any other directors like him today working now or in the past that you think made a great horror movie, even though they're not considered, quote-unquote, a horror director?
Yeah, I mean, it seems totally counterintuitive to say this, but I think last year Wes Anderson had a fantastic scene of tension and somewhat horror in the Grand Budapest Hotel when I forget his name, but Willem Dafoe's character is chasing down Jeff Goldblum's character.
That is such a wonderfully Hitchcockian and scene of suspense that I never knew that Wes Anderson had in him. And it ends with such a brutal button that I was very impressed by that. Nolan is another good one. I think there's several scenes in Dark Knight that are just horrifying. One of the ones that I think of is the Joker when he's got the fake Batman kidnapped, and he's recording his kind of manifesto on a camera phone or something like that, and he ends it with this like maniacal laugh into this grainy camera, and it is truly disturbing, considering what he's doing to that guy. I mean, you mentioned
poor Anthony Michael Hall, or no, that's not Anthony Michael Hall. That's
it's before that. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, but yeah, he doesn't fare any better. I mean, you mentioned that Seven might be the best serial killer movie of all time, but then you mentioned the end of The Prestige. You have to wonder if there's not some serial killing going on in that movie too, in a way. But I think Martin Scorsese is a guy that whenever Shutter Island was announced, I was really excited for, because I had seen this episode of Amazing Stories, the Spielberg Amblin anthology TV show. Sorry, we got a sneezer over here. All right, that Spielberg produced in the 80s. There's an episode of that called Mirror, Mirror that Scorsese directed, and it's about this TV writer that writes violent TV shows and realizes that there's a guy that is showing up to get him. He thinks that violence doesn't affect anything, but now there's this guy coming to get him. In a way similar to the violence that he writes in his TV shows. But he only sees this guy in mirrors. And it is an extremely effective little horror short. So whenever he announced that he was directing Shutter Island and it was going to be a horror movie, I was very excited. And I think that is another example of a movie that really uses like musical stings extremely well and is very creepy and scary. And, I mean, I think I could say that for Cape Fear, too. I think that's, you know, probably a lot of people rate that a little bit lower on his filmography, but I still think that, you know, he's not a guy that we think of as a horror director very often, but he totally nailed it when he goes for it because, again, he's a great director, and great directors usually do horror well.
Yeah, Shutter Island is a great example. I think it's just a great horror movie, and it was exciting when, like you said, it was announced that he was making that. When I saw the first trailer and going back to, you know, I hate to just keep using Stephen King as an example of my limited knowledge of horror literature, but I just thought, wow, this looks like Scorsese directing a Stephen King novel, you know, like it's just what it feels like. And, you know, kind of, the movie itself is kind of what that feels like, but I think it sort of transcends that lazy, analogy or comparison. And it's really fantastic. And there is just truly some really super scary imagery in that movie. The fantasy sequences, obviously, that are dream sequences, you know, towards the middle of the movie, whether it's a flashback to war or, a moment in involving Elias Koteas, that is just like,
yes.
Whoa, Marty, man, what are you doing, you know? You're freaking me out, dude. And so, yeah, he proved himself a really, truly great director of horror for sure, and it seemed like something that movie felt so, it was kind of like electrifying at times and felt so fresh for him because it kind of felt like something that Scorsese had always wanted to do, you know, and
right.
It was just great to see him realize that. And, you know, I'm trying to think of a couple of others. I mean, the Coen brothers, obviously, I think No Country for Old Men has some horrifying moments, and
oh,
got one of the scariest movie characters ever with Javier Bardem, who is just fantastic. And then I think of something like Woody Allen, for that matter. I mean, you wouldn't think Woody Allen in horror, but if you watch Shadows and Fog, I mean, that's Woody Allen's horror movie, and there are some really, really genuinely scary moments in that movie. I mean, it's about a strangler on the loose, you know, And I think that, obviously, through the black and white cinematography and the staging, I really think Woody Allen is able to create a really unsettling mood and tone in that movie. So what I find interesting is when these great directors who we aren't used to as horror filmmakers, they're able to stretch themselves and explore this genre again, whether it's with an entire movie or just with, you know, within moments of those movies.
I know you're a big Contagion fan, which is, I think, a really good horror movie.
Say again?
I know you're a Contagion fan.
Oh, man.
Which
yeah.
we both consider a horror movie. Have you seen Soderbergh's Kafka?
No, I haven't.
It's fantastic, and it's horrifying. There are these characters in there that are just basically raving lunatics that just run people down screaming and just beat them to death. And there are scenes of just sheer terror. It's one of Soderbergh's most underrated movies. It's written by Lem Dobbs, the guy that also wrote The Limey. And it's really good. It's another great example of a guy that, you know, when it's time to get scary, he knows how to do it because he knows how to make movies.
Yeah, Contagion was my favorite movie of 2011, and I stand by that for sure.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's a great example of a director who doesn't normally make horror movies making a horror movie, and he, I think, you can throw into the same category as Sam Raimi, as a guy truly loves his audience and cares about them and wants to have fun with them and puts his characters through the ringer, you know, to the benefit of his audience and making them want to squirm, scream, and laugh. And poor Gwyneth Paltrow probably gets it the worst of anybody, obviously, in that movie. But there are some really great moments that Soderbergh delivers and that you can tell that he relishes doing, because we, the audience, relish the same thing.
Yeah, it almost goes back to that conversation you had with Graham about Spielberg violence, where it's like, at a certain point, you know, you wonder just how fun it is for these guys sometimes to indulge in their, you know, their adolescent, everybody's adolescent interest in violence.
Well, has Spielberg made a horror movie?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would consider Jaws a horror movie. I mean, that movie was so scary it made people throw up, you know? If you count Poltergeist, I think Poltergeist is pretty terrifying. I think there are elements of horror in Close Encounters. But then I think, and of course, War of the Worlds, which I think is really effective. But I think, I mean, for me personally, one of the first times I think I was in a theater and just legitimately terrified was the T-Rex attack in Jurassic Park. It may be my favorite scene in any movie ever at this point. And I feel like we've talked about Spielberg so much already this year, but, you know, haters gonna hate. But it's fantastic. And I remember seeing it with a friend of mine who was maybe more cynical at the time and less able to be tricked by movies. But the raptors in the kitchen sequence in the middle of it, he saw how into it I was and, like, pushed my shoulder or something like that, and I jumped like 3 feet in the air. He was a real punk. So that was kind of my first theater experience with just something that terrifying. So yeah, I think I have to count Spielberg as an effective horror director.
Well, isn't it so precious when you see a good horror movie, you know? Because, I mean, there's just so much bad horror out there, you know? I mean,
mostly bad, yeah.
Yeah, mostly. Like, yeah, it's a very small percentage of actual good horror. I mean, you can just scroll through, like, the Netflix instant horror page and just see just what kind of crap is out there. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, the people who made these movies worked really hard on them. I'm not taking anything away from the effort that people put into them. But, man, oh, man, it's like a needle in a haystack. It really is. And, you know, it's just all that much better when you get a great filmmaker who, you know, takes some time to either, again, experiment a little bit or, you know, dabble in a genre that they happen to be pretty great at. And I mentioned Fincher before, and, you know, he made, you know, was, you know, arguably my favorite on you know, among these directors. But going back to another movie he made, a film that I wasn't as fond of necessarily, especially when I first saw it, but his movie Zodiac from 2007, I mean, there's some really scary stuff in that, too. And obviously, it's based on a true story, which for, I'm sure, a lot of people makes it that much scarier. But, I mean, I think he reaches back into that bag of tricks that he had in Seven, where you see that, wow, this is a guy who is really talented when it comes to staging mood and tone and moments like this on screen and making a serial killer movie. It's a little scary how good he is at it, to be honest with you. And there are moments like that with the Zodiac Killer and with characters in the movie think are the Zodiac Killer that make for really great moments of horror. And so I hope that it's something that Fincher isn't done with. And I think that there are definitely elements of it in something like Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, right? And Gone Girl, even in some cases. So
definitely,
hopefully it's a genre that he re-explores in the very near future, because I think that he happens to be one of the best at it right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the Alien 3 is not a great movie, but there are definitely excellent kind of horror elements of that. So yeah, I think it's in Fincher's blood, and I don't think he's done with it for forever. Yeah.
Well, and quickly, what are some things? And I talked a little bit about the jump scare thing and how it's often cheap, and sometimes cheap can be good. And again, people can take advantage of it and use it the right way. But are there any things about movies that don't scare you and that you find, you know, you find tired, and any sort of tropes that you're sick of? I mean, we've talked about found footage on FNU before, and I'm personally kind of sick of the genre, and you know, I get kind of sick. It's like, you know, it's like horror, the ratio that we just talked about. I mean, the ratio of found footage movies and good ones, I mean, it's just really laughable, to be honest with you, and I've only seen kind of a couple of ones that I really truly like, but those are a couple of things for me that just don't work, and things that I wish that the horror genre would leave alone for a long time, if not forever. Are there any things like that for you that you wish that the genre would just retire?
Yeah, I mean, it's stuff like that. It's basically anything that's kind of cheap and shallow. If you don't have good characters and you don't have a good setting and you don't have good pacing, then your scares probably won't work. And no amount of, you know, artifice or fakery or CGI or like cheap elements like endangering or killing, you know, kids or helpless people or animals or something like that. It's not, if there's not character there, if there's not stakes there otherwise, then that stuff, it doesn't create stakes. So I think that's usually my problem with horror movies, is that they think that, oh, as long as we're brutal, we'll be scary. And no, there's nothing really scary about brutality. Brutality is usually just angering more than anything else. So I guess that's why I don't gravitate towards what they call torture porn movies or anything like that. So, I mean, I think that is probably my biggest hang up with a lot of horror movies that I see, is just cheap stakes and a reliance on sensationalism rather than craft.
Are there any, you know, quote-unquote great horror movies, classics in the eyes of most or some that you haven't seen? Or is there a horror self of shame that you've got working?
Oh, I should make one. I probably haven't made one because it's so shameful. I mean, there's a few, like, I haven't seen any of the George Romero zombie movies except for Night of the Living Dead and Land of the Dead. So I definitely need to check out Dawn and Day of the Dead.
Is that the one with Dennis Hopper?
Yes, it is. And he gives actually a pretty great line reading where he says, "Zombies freak me out, man," while he picks his nose. That's the best part of the movie. And I need to see Suspiria. I've never seen any Dario Argento.
That's on my list.
The Reanimator is kind of a horror classic I've never seen that I'm kind of scared of seeing, because I think it might have some of that kind of like Cronenberg body horror. In general, Cronenberg is a horror director that I am so scared of checking out, because every time I watch one of his movies, it changes me, and I'm never happy with that. I mean, off the top of my head, those are kind of the big ones. I've never seen David Lynch's Lost Highway, and I remember the dude from that, I forget what his name is, Robert Blake.
Robert Blake.
from the trailers that I saw on TV for that movie freaked me out when I was in middle school. So that's probably one I need to tackle someday.
Those are good picks for sure. And Suspiria is on mine too. I haven't seen Reanimator. I know that it's on Netflix Instant right now. It's on my personal queue. So I hope to be watching that within the next month or so. And you know, there's things like Nosferatu that you mentioned before, the original that I have not seen yet. And I would definitely want to see the Kinski version too.
Yeah.
Since you mentioned it, I know that you're a huge fan of, and you mentioned before, the Nicholas Rogue movie, Don't Look Now. That's one I still have not seen. So I actually have it out now from the public library. So I hope to watch that in the next few days. So, I mean, I've seen a lot, but, you know, as always with movies, no matter how many you've seen, you've got that much more to explore. So there's a lot to look forward to and a lot to be scared of. And I hope to hope to explore it within this month. And I keep saying every single year that I'm going to do that. And I do knock out a few here and there, but the list is just too long. And, you know, you just have to be thankful that you still have some time to see them when you can. But golly, there's just a ton of it. And I mentioned how much bad stuff there is, but there's still so much good horror that I haven't seen personally yet. And I just really look forward to checking it out because I want to be scared.
For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com and aspectradioshow.com.